I think, is movement towards full democracy in Hong Kong.
We explore the latest developments in Hong Kong and examine the future there. It's Wednesday, July 10th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, an agreement of sorts with the Taliban. We'll tell you about an economic battle between Japan and South Korea. And Australia tries to decide how to deal with the growing number of drug deaths at music concerts. It's all on today's VOA Asia. After several weeks of controversy and large angry street protest, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam says legislation that would have allowed extraditions to mainland China is dead. In announcing that decision Tuesday during a news conference, the embattled Lam conceded the public still had lingering doubts about the government's sincerity or worries whether the government would restart the process in the Legislative Council.
There are still lingering doubts about the government's sincerity or worries whether the government will restart the process in the Legislative Council. So I reiterate here, there is no such plan. The bill is dead.
Well, leaders of the protest movement told reporters later in the day that they were unmoved by Lam's decision and urged her to meet directly with the demonstrators. In addition to the withdrawal of the bill, the protesters are also demanding an independent probe into allegations of police abuse against them during the demonstrations. We welcome to VOA Asia Richard Bush, senior fellow at the Brookings Institute in Washington, D.C. Richard, what do you make of all this? Are these protests going to continue from what the protesters have said?
Well, it certainly looks like they're going to continue. They have a head of steam behind them, and they were successful. In my personal view, I think that the protesters should declare victory and go home. Particularly after the invasion of the Legislative Council complex. I think that they're losing some support in the public, and if Carrie Lam says it's dead, it really is dead. They should just take her word for it.
What does this do as far as the overall scenario of the relationship between mainland China, between Beijing and Hong Kong?
Bill, when it was put forward, I think reconfirmed for skeptical people in Hong Kong that the rule of law and the independence of the judiciary, which was a promise that Beijing made to the people of Hong Kong before it reverted back to China, and which it kept for almost 20 years, that promise is seriously in doubt. So it deepens the mistrust between a lot of people in Hong Kong on the one hand and the government in Beijing and the Hong Kong government on the other. How that can be put back together, I don't know. I hope that China understands that the best thing it could do at this point is to reaffirm the promises it made and act on those promises.
Speaking of promises, the one you are talking about, is that in danger right now? What have you heard from the Beijing government authorities that might put it in jeopardy, the agreements made between mainland China and Hong Kong?
Beijing is faced with a dilemma. It doesn't like instability. It seems to have convinced itself that the United States was behind all this trouble, and yet it is doing very little to try and regain the trust and confidence and promote the welfare of Hong Kong people.
What else do the protesters want, and now do they stand any chance whatsoever of getting what they want?
The underlying issue here, I think, is movement towards full democracy in Hong Kong, not just the protection of civil and political rights and the rule of law, which Hong Kong promised, but election of all major leaders of the Hong Kong government. Democracy is about checks and balances. Hong Kong's incomplete democracy means that going to the street is the best check and best balance that the public has.
What do you think of so far of the U.S. reaction to all of this, as well as other nations around the world?
Well, for the U.S., this, I think, is probably viewed as a David and Goliath story, with Goliath being big bag China and David being the protesters in the street. And in this round, David won.
Richard Bush is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. Richard, thanks as always for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. An Australian student detained and later deported by North Korea has broken his silence on Twitter. Alex Sigley, a 29-year-old studying Korean literature in Pyongyang, was detained Tuesday by North Korea. On Twitter, Sigley dismissed the accusation of spying, writing, "The allegation that I am a spy is pretty obviously false." The widely publicized case of a 41-year-old school bookkeeper sentenced to 6 months in prison for recording sexually suggestive phone calls she received from the principal and her school has gained traction after the Indonesian government indicated a willingness to grant her amnesty. The U.S. government will issue licenses to companies seeking to sell goods to China's Huawei, where there is no threat to national security. This is VOA Asia. A delegation of more than 50 Afghans concluded a high-profile conference with the Taliban Monday with a joint statement emphasizing the need to bring civilian casualties in the nation's civil war to zero and reaching a positive outcome in the ongoing negotiations between the Taliban and the United States in Doha. They also emphasized the need to include all parties in the negotiations to end the 18-year-long conflict. It was also the first intra-Afghan dialogue hosted formally by two governments, Qatar and Germany. Joining us on VOA Asia is Michael Kugelman. He's director and senior associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. Michael, is this a milepost here? Is this something very important that's happened?
Well, I think it is. I mean, we shouldn't overstate the significance of what happened. I mean, you had this meeting of several dozen Afghans and the Taliban, as you mentioned, and they came out with this statement, which really is a statement. I mean, that's all it is. It essentially represents a roadmap of sorts, a blueprint that points a way toward peace. So there's no formal agreement or anything like that. However, it is a milestone because you had some major rival Afghan political factions that came together to talk to the Taliban, and they actually agreed on several very specific actionable ideas to move forward toward the peace process, and that entails, among other things, releasing prisoners, releasing elderly folks, releasing sick people, and it entails also doing everything possible to avoid targeting public institutions such as schools and to avoid targeting civilians. So, the fact that you have these a very fractious political environment in Afghanistan, and yet you did have several dozen senior members of the political class come together to hash out this roadmap with the Taliban. I think that the outcome could have been a lot worse, though. Of course, moving forward, it's still going to be a lot. It's going to be very difficult.
The Taliban attacks continue in Afghanistan, however.
Yeah, they continue. In fact, right when this intra-Afghan dialogue was convening on Sunday, there was this horrible attack in Ghazni that ended up wounding, I believe, about 50 Afghan kids. And this comes just a week after there was another one. So, yeah, the attacks keep happening. And what was troubling is that there's nothing in this joint statement that emerged from the intra-Afghan dialogue that said anything or expressed any regrets for attacks like that. Unfortunately, the bottom line is that the Taliban is going to continue to stage attacks like this, including attacks that kill civilians, because it's trying to strengthen its bargaining position in talks. It wants to make the United States and the Afghan government feel increasingly desperate. And essentially the message here is that, well, if you don't talk to us and give us what we want, we're going to just keep doing these attacks, and we're even going to step them up. So it's pretty depressing, but I think that, ironically, the deeper we get into the peace process, the more you could see these types of horrific attacks.
Now, the U.S. and the Taliban are scheduled to resume talks and continue talks, correct?
Yeah, those bilateral talks between the U.S. and the Taliban are scheduled to resume very soon, and they will. And the messaging from the U.S. government, or at least Ambassador Khalilzad, who's leading the talks on the U.S. side, the messaging has been increasingly positive, suggesting that there's been tremendous progress made. And I don't know if that's just a lot of happy talk, which it could be to an extent, or a genuine belief that things are starting to look good and there is a chance of coming close to some type of agreement.
Michael Kugelman is director and senior associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington. As always, Michael, thank you. Happening now in Asia, Canada's Medallion Resources Limited said today it was looking at sites across North America to develop an extraction plant for rare earth materials, as the ongoing U.S.-China trade war has turned the spotlight on those strategic metals. Company CEO says most likely it will build this plant in the center of North America, eyeing the region between Texas and Saskatchewan. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. U.S. prosecutors argued Monday for the death penalty for the former University of Illinois student who was convicted of killing a visiting scholar from China. Prosecutor James Nelson told the U.S. District Court in Peoria, Illinois, this was not an ordinary crime. It was cold, cruel, and calculated. Brent Christensen was found guilty last month of kidnapping, raping, and stabbing Yingyang Zhang. It took the jury less than 2 hours to decide on Christensen's guilt. Christensen's lawyers asked the jury Monday to spare his life, saying he had mental health issues and struggled with substance abuse. At the trial's opening in June, defense attorneys for Christensen made the rare admission that their client was guilty, all in an effort to spare him a death sentence. Zhang's family came to Illinois from China for the trial. Her fiancé told the jury Monday that Zhang's smart, she's brave, she's optimistic. Video testimony by Zhang's college friends also was shown to the jury Monday. The jury's being asked to decide between the death penalty and life in prison without the possibility of parole. The University of Illinois' large Chinese student population has been closely following those proceedings. Coming up, the leader of India says the poor will be empowered there. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Now this news from VOA Asia. Bangladesh is striving to stop Rohingya refugees from being trafficked, but the crackdown will take some time, said an official. That after the United States criticized the South Asian nation in its annual report on nations' efforts to tackle trafficking. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For VOA's business scene, I'm Skylar Ogden. Prime Minister Narendra Modi unveiled his first budget since being re-elected to a second term in May. Calling it the Green Budget, Modi says the plan will revive growth and create a $5 trillion economy. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
In the past 5 years, our government has worked for the upliftment of the poor, farmers, Dalits, underprivileged, and has taken several steps to empower them. In the next 5 years, the same empowerment will make them the powerhouse of our country's development.
Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman says that a heavy focus will be placed on infrastructure development, creating liquidity in India's banking sector, and reducing pollution. The plan aims to create 20 million new houses by 2022 and give all rural houses drinking water by 2024. Sitharaman also said India's public sector banks would be injected with $10.2 billion to tackle bad loans. In a country with some of the world's most polluted cities, the budget also includes tax breaks for individuals who purchase electric cars. Prime Minister Modi, who has faced sharp criticism for failing to create jobs, says that the new budget plan will create growth in the environmental, electric mobility, and solar sectors. Japan has imposed new restrictions on exports that could hit South Korea's tech industry. South Korea's top chip-making companies like Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix typically rely on three materials that come from Japan. Now Japan is requiring exporters to get permission each time they want to ship, which takes around 90 days. South Korean President Moon Jae-in urged Japan to reconsider.
I urge Japan to withdraw its measures and for the two countries to have a sincere consultation.
Experts say unresolved issues related to forced labor during World War II lie at the heart of the current trade issues. Tensions flared last October when South Korea's Supreme Court ruled that Japan's Nippon Steel must compensate South Koreans for forced labor during World War II. South Korean chip makers currently rely on Japan for most of the semiconductor materials, but the country is now seeking to buy more of the materials from countries like Taiwan or China. South Korea is also considering its own countermeasures.
The vicious cycle of actions and counteractions is not desirable at all for both countries.
However, our government cannot rule out countermeasures if the Japanese action inflicts damage on South Korean companies. I don't want to see that.
South Korea plans to file a complaint with the World Trade Organization over Japan's restrictions. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
Earlier in the program, we took a close look at the protests that have taken place in Hong Kong. Many say those protests will have a negative effect on the center of finance. VOA's Bill Gallo has the story.
It's Hong Kong's worst political violence since the former British colony was handed over to China in 1997. Protesters lashing out at an extradition bill that would further erase the distinction between Hong Kong and China. The uncertainty threatens to damage Hong Kong's reputation as a stable international financial hub.
People view Hong Kong as a special place. You put your money here, you have contracts here, you do business here, you expect a certain type of activity, one country, two systems. And the sense that the lines could have been blurred between Hong Kong and China really worried some people.
Though the extradition proposal has been paused, that hasn't stopped businesses from worrying about how things may change under Communist Party rule.
When they make their 5-year or 10-year plan, they may take this into account and they may consider placing their resources in other places. I don't think this is without any support.
For now, foreign companies are not stampeding for the exits.
There are hundreds of, if not thousands of American companies based here in Hong Kong and Western companies. I see no evidence of them moving. I do see evidence of concern.
That concern is likely to intensify as 2047 approaches. That's when China is set to fully take over Hong Kong. But there are worries about what may happen long before then.
Even if it's just the status quo, being sensible, recognizing that Hong Kong has good reasons to have things that are different from mainland China, then things need not be bleak.
At this point, a lot depends on how much China intends to force change on a city that's long been known for its openness. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
This news break from VOA Asia, Sri Lanka's police chief and former defense secretary were released on bail Tuesday, a week after they were arrested over allegations that they failed to prevent the Easter Day bomb attacks that killed more than 250 people. The attorney general had ordered their arrest last week and urged the acting police chief to bring charges against the two, including crimes against humanity. A coroner in New South Wales, in Australia, is investigating the drug-related deaths of 6 youths at music festivals in that country. The coroner is looking at ways to prevent future tragedies. Among them is a request by the bereaved families for the government to allow pill testing. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
A coroner in New South Wales is investigating the drug-related deaths of 6 youths at music festivals in Australia. The coroner is looking at ways to prevent future tragedies. Among them is a request by the bereaved families for the government to allow pill testing. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports. The inquest in Sydney follows a series of deaths at music festivals in Australia's most popular state, New South Wales. The coroner heard that one victim, 19-year-old Alex Ross King, took an unusually high amount of the drug MDMA, which is commonly known as ecstasy, before arriving at an event in Sydney because she was afraid of being caught with the drugs by the police. The young woman developed a body temperature of 41 degrees Celsius and had a rapid and irregular pulse. She died later following a heart attack. In December, 22-year-old Joshua Tam died after taking illicit drugs at the Lost Paradise Music Festival north of Sydney. His mother, Julie Tam, believes that had pill testing been allowed at the venue, he could still be alive.
It's more about the intervention that happens at the point of pill testing. It's about an intervention with health professionals who may have been able to speak with our son at that point. It's really about having a last-minute conversation that we as parents weren't there to have.
The New South Wales government has repeatedly stressed that testing illicit drugs at festivals would only encourage their use. While many doctors believe a simple check of their ingredients, including contaminants, would save lives. Pill testing is supported by the Royal Australasian College of Physicians and the Australian Medical Association. The coroner's inquest is focusing on the use of MDMA. When it's absorbed into a user's bloodstream, it releases various chemicals that can bring on confidence and euphoria, but it can also cause dehydration and heat stroke. Those taking a large or particularly potent batch can suffer paranoia, aggression, or even death. The government has estimated that more than 40% of Australians aged over 14 years have used an illicit drug at least once in their lifetime. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Indonesia is sending dozens of containers of waste back to wealthy nations after finding it was contaminated with used diapers, plastic and other materials, adding to a growing backlash in Southeast Asia against being a dumping ground for the developed world's rubbish. The Directorate General of Customs said Tuesday that 49 containers at Batam Port near Singapore will be returned to Australia, the United States, France, Germany and Hong Kong after inspection showed their contents violated Indonesian laws on the import of hazardous and toxic waste. Separately, the head of customs at East Java's Tanjung Perak port, Basuki Suryanto, said eight other containers with 210 tons of waste that arrived from Australia on June 20th were supposed to contain only paper, but they included other matter. China banned the import of plastic waste at the end of 2017, resulting in more being sent to developing Southeast Asian nations. That's going to wrap up our program. Well, it won't. Let us hear about science first, shall we?
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the California Institute of Technology have discovered a near-Earth orbiting asteroid with the shortest year known for any asteroid in the solar system. Called 2019 LF6, this nearly 1 kilometer-wide rocky asteroid circles the Sun in an elliptical orbit over a 151-day period. The asteroid's orbit takes it from beyond Venus to closer to the Sun than Mercury. 2019 LF6 is known as an Altira asteroid, which are about 20 asteroids whose orbits are contained within Earth's orbit of the Sun. Though the 2019 LF6 is considered a near-Earth object, astronomers have determined that it is not considered potentially hazardous. The Caltech astronomers made their discovery with the Zwicky Transient Facility, a camera that was recently installed on a telescope at the Palomar Observatory near San Diego, California. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Get our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us also at voanews.com and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program